Let me explain to you my process for every speaking event. I get a sheet of paper. I scribble down the words that I need to say, the words that I want to say. I pace back and forth. I rub my hands together to calm myself down. I start to sweat. I start telling myself, why are you here? Why are you doing this? What are you doing? Why? Rinse, repeat, rinse, repeat. I get to the event. I meet individuals. I pace back and forth. I tell them that I'm not ready for this. Then I get on the stage. I start to speak. And then I kill it. I feel that podcasting is going to be the same process for me. So I appreciate you being here in this space and taking the time to listen to what I have to say. Welcome to the intro. This is De Facto. My name is Tony Cook. I was born in Rochester, Minnesota, one of 9 kids. I am the baby. My mother is of Laos descent. My father is of Chinese descent. They were born and raised in Cambodia. Cambodian is the nationality. Ethnicity encompasses the word Khmer. Now, Khmer also is broken down into various groups. There is Khmer Krom, Khmer Sarin, Mon Khmer. There are Khmer of Chinese descent, like my father. The Khmer of Laos descent, like my mother. There's a group of individuals who practice Islam. They are known as the Jam people. They are also Khmer. Now, the Jam people also live in other parts of other countries, but they encompass the ethnicity and the backgrounds with this country. We are essentially a mixing pot of different Asian ethnic backgrounds, going as far as the Polynesian, Melanesian countries. One of the words that we utilize is from the Malay, meaning sarong, basically sarong. Just to give an example of the complexity of the language. Now, my parents moved to or immigrated in, I believe, 1984. I was born in 1988. And the reason that I am an American is that I am a byproduct of genocide. Although I did not experience it myself, I feel that I bear the scars. And I also know that it's very difficult for other Khmer individuals to have a conversation about what happened. I feel that my body, the best way to explain is that my body has experienced that type of trauma, and my body responds to trauma as though I was there. Some instances, I feel that some of the memories carried over to me by my mother. Now, that puts a predisposition of mental illness. I have complex post-traumatic stress disorder. And this condition has now prevented me from being effective in my work in advocacy. So I decided to instead shape myself and work to build myself in a different way. And it's going to be through podcasting. See, I had a dream to become a U.S. senator. The U.S. Senate is not diverse, and I wanted to change that. Even though I might not be able to achieve that, I'm still going to push the needle to create a better America. So this is my story, my first episode. I'd like to share with you why I became an advocate and why I'm so passionate about politics. I wanted to weave the intersections of my identity. We focus on a singular issue, a singular identity, but when individuals have various identities, both marginalized and privileges, it's those intersections, those unique cross links between two identities that creates a unique experience for the individual. We don't understand that we have different lived experiences in America. And there aren't two Americas. America is a spectrum. And that is why I created this podcast. See, my people, the Khmer people, voted for Trump in massive numbers. I cannot have another Donald Trump in the office. I cannot have individuals with that ideology in the political sphere. I'm doing anything and everything that I could to prevent that from happening again. The Asian population is growing at numbers that can exceed other racial groups. We don't vote. We're not involved. Not in locations where it counts. Stacey Abrams really changed that dynamic by engaging the Asian American communities. I decided to do my part and create this podcast to inspire individuals within the Asian communities to vote. Not just for the president, but for the U.S. Senator, for Congress, for the school board, for your city council. I do not want a world where we repeat history. And Asian Americans have the potential to change the world around us through our vote. This is a love letter to the individuals who've been erased through white supremacy, through colonization, through the processes that are weaved in, but not weaved in with a specific law. See, I was born and raised in a city that accepted refugees in massive numbers. They did not have any laws that segregated individuals. But we still were segregated. I was born and raised into a community that, again, was segregated. We knew that that was happening. We understood the injustice, but we did not have a word for it. Just kidding, we did. We had naming conventions for those locations that were segregated. I can tell you where I lived just by saying I live in Asian Avenue. I could speak to somebody in my hometown. And during that time, they could say, tell me no more. I know where that is, 22nd Avenue. See, what happened was brown people moved in and white people moved out. White people moved out not to another part of the city. They moved to suburbs in Rochester. Not necessarily suburbs. Rochester is a very small town. So, I mean, not super small, but not small enough that we actually had suburbs. But there were outlying like towns outside of Rochester that these individuals migrated to. This affected the housing market in specific areas. White people did not want to move into areas that brown people occupied. This caused the housing market to lower and attracted other individuals of the same ethnicity. So by the time we knew it, our street was filled with Khmer individuals. I did not learn English until I was in grade school. My first language is Khmer. My culture revolved around my ethnicity. See, I was born and raised in a community that felt like I was living in Cambodia because of the ways that we migrate, because of the ways that we respond to xenophobic behaviors. My mother sheltered me as much as she could from the hate that she was experiencing. Racism shaped my world. It shaped my life. And the subconscious behaviors and the response to racism even shaped my name. In Cambodia, if I were to live there, the naming conventions would be your surname and then your first name. The first name of the child typically rhymes or is similar to the parent's name. My father's name is Yuan, which gave me the name Yim. Surname, Kut. So my name is Kut Yim. But something happened when I was born, something that was brand new to our family. And I believe it was my sister who gave me the gift of my middle name, Tony. I didn't even know my first name was Yim, not until I started grade school. So I always stuck with my name, Tony. Why did she give me that name? Why did I be the first person in my family to have a middle name? To be honest, I think they were bullied with the names that were given to them. Names that did not sound American. Names that were foreign. I think they gave me that name to give me a chance in this cruel, cruel country. And I wish that just something as simple as a middle name, something that gave me a chance, was enough. It wasn't. I remember growing up and wandering off from the little block that I resided in, and I would run into friends from school. And they were playing together. They were playing, laughing, and I was filled with joy to see them. Walk over them, they would greet me. Their parents would peek out and see that I was standing next to them talking. Now, this neighborhood kid had other neighborhood kids with them. And she, the mother, came out, waved her son to come in. The son says, "Mom, can I have my friends come inside the house too?" She said, "Yes." So we all walk over to get into the house. She stops me and says, "Oh, I'm sorry, but we don't have enough room for you." And as young as naive as I was, I believed her. But that wasn't the only instance that happened. Other neighborhood kids would be pulled inside the house. And every time I would be greeted to come inside by the friend, the parent would refuse to have me come into the house. This is de facto segregation, and this is what inspired the name of my podcast. There was not a law set forth to create an environment to segregate us. It was the behaviors of the individuals, behaviors of hate in their heart, behaviors that continue to this day. These unspoken rules that really shaped America to create a spectrum. Our lived experiences are vastly different. This podcast is going to explore that through the lens of our intersectional identities. Now, what is my background with advocacy? Why did I decide to even become an advocate? I now reside in Des Moines, Iowa, and I used to live in Orlando, Florida. I'll talk about that in a future episode. But this was, I don't know my years, but the year that the Pulse shooting happened, I woke up that day and I just remember my spouse saying, "Hey, Pulse got shot up." And it was just like in one ear, out the other. I could not comprehend what was going on. And when I finally watched the news, when I finally realized that the space that I created, a safe space that I created for myself, which was Pulse Nightclub, somebody took that away from me. I have lived a life of neglect and abuse. And that was the first time that I felt secure. Whenever I think of a safe space, I think of Florida. I think of my time at Pulse Nightclub. And I thought to myself, should I give up and just cower in fear? It took that. It took a mass shooting that connected me to tell me that I need to do something, anything. I pushed, and I raised $15,000. And the money went to One Orlando Fund. And that was the first time, the first instance that I felt that I was able to do something worthwhile. And it gave me a high, to be honest. And since then, I just continue to push the needle to create environments that are better for individuals that are marginalized. The 2019, I lobbied Chuck Grassley, Joni Ernst, Cindy Axne for their support with the Equality Act. My main focus was actually through the lens of employment. There were still many states that could fire individuals, gay, lesbian, transgender, bisexual, non-binary, queer. I was secure. Iowa has legislation that protects against discrimination through employment, and we have those protections. But I'm not the kind of person that feels secure in that sense. that law can be changed. It can be edited. My rights could be taken away at any time. So I pushed to extend the experience of security to all four corners of the country. And in doing so, I thought the Equality Act is going to be my life's work. I'm going to make sure this act passes. And then the Supreme Court decided that you can't discriminate. And the Civil Rights Act was edited to make sexuality, gender identity, a protected class. That was what my focus was on. And when that legislation, or I'm sorry, when the Supreme Court made that decision, a part of me started to panic because I thought that this would be my life. My life's work is to make sure that this specific piece of the legislation passes. I didn't know what to do with myself. And so I pushed to have other things available. So I started to do more public speaking, lead workshops, advise the city on queer issues. And I emphasize on intersectionality because, again, it's those intersections that really needs attention. But what I realize is we focus on singular issues, especially in Iowa. And I realize that I can't be in spaces that I am not welcome. I thought that I would be a bridge to link white and black communities. That was an abusive relationship. And I realized that I did that. I was in that specific sphere, that space, because I, as an Asian American, was not worthy to have my voice be heard. There's the expectations of Asian Americans in the country is vastly, I don't know, I don't really have a word for that specific expectation, but the model minority myth, this myth that we are the model citizen. We make good money. We have good jobs. We are hardworking. I look to dispel that because whenever I speak on advocacy, I'm told I am not black enough. I am told that I do not understand what oppression is. We don't have a space in the table. Politics ignores our cries for help. Politicians do not engage our communities. We have an experience right now of erasure. I am attempting to change that. I am attempting to preserve the cultural integrity. And as I work to explore this, I plan to bring individuals that have an expertise or individuals who have a specific intersection that piques my interest, that is able to articulate the conditions of being an Asian American. As I explore this, I hope that this inspires the next generation to take on the mantle of advocacy work. I don't think that I could strike meaningful change in this generation. I look to Gen Z to create and push a better world. But I'm not going to sit back. I'm going to be there. I am going to make sure that they have all the tools available from the perspective of my expertise in intersections. This is De Facto. My name is Tony Cook. Thank you for taking your time today to listen to my podcast. Please go to defactotk.com. That's defactotk.com. This will be a website that houses my podcasts. Blogs will be rolling out as future content becomes available. Your donations support original content that promotes queer voices. Any amount's helpful and greatly appreciated. Have a great day.